Donald, reel number 10. Can I take you forward now to the end of January 1918, when you were based on Imbros, and the activities the two German ships, Goeben and Breslau, were causing some concern in your part of the Aegean? Can you describe this incident and your involvement in it?
Yes. The function of the two camel flights at Imbros, of which flights I was in charge, was to carry out dawn patrols, keeping an eye right up the straits, the Dardanelles, for either the Goeben or the Breslau, making any attempt to slip out, come back, report straits clear, do that in the evening as well, and keep up during the day an occasional... We're really keeping our eye on the Dardanelles as one of our main jobs. And on the 19th of January, I had to go to Mudros, which is our HQ in the middle of the Aegean, to collect a new Sopwith camel, because my old one had got slightly battered. I can very well remember that evening, because quite a number of chaps were going home on leave, and we had a very successful party, which lasted until, well, probably about 1 or 2 a.m. It's not terrific in the way of... nowadays it would be called a booth up, but certainly there was a certain amount of beer going. And I can remember the party and the chaps were going home. Well, it was a very, very good party indeed. And to everybody's horror, we were wakened up in the very early hours of the morning with the shouts of, "The Goeben's out, the Goeben's out!" He was lying about 25 stricken miles away from where the Goeben was. And no new plane. My old plane was unserviceable. So it was just a matter of all available planes, the bombers, which were already bombed up, and of course the Imbros bombers were ready to attack with bombs, got underway. It was a case of everybody for himself. There was no formation flying. So the nearest fighter, escort fighter I could grab was a Sopwith Pup. And I took off with her. I don't know why, I hadn't been there for about 5 minutes. I had a hunch that all was not well. We didn't have a petrol gauge, and I suddenly thought, I've no check whether this one's been filled up or anything. So I came back hastily and landed. There's no sense in flying halfway across the Aegean and finding your tank was empty. And by the grace of the Lord, I did that, because we found the tank was just kind of verging on empty. However, by that time, Dad Hicks had just landed with his camel, having been out and had a look, give me a rough idea where the Goeben and Breslau now were. They had slipped out before, well before dawn, slipping through our minefield quite successfully, and the dawn patrol had reported the straits clear, not knowing that the Goeben and Breslau were actually behind them, were out in the Aegean. Why they didn't attack Mudros and Lemnos and blow the HQ to pieces, I don't know, because they may have thought the Lord Nelson was there, who was supposed to be lying there with, but she was in dock in Malta, so there weren't any heavy ships to stop them. In any case, the Goeben was a very heavily armed battle cruiser. But they didn't. They turned back. And that was when we all came into the picture, and all I could do, well, this time I got a camel with a good, got the tank filled up, and got going, and went in to make sure, mainly to escort the bombers against attack from any German fighters from the mainland, and help in the attack on the Goeben and Breslau, which from a mere point of view was a lot more successful than it sounded in the newspapers, because we were hitting both ships with quite small bombs from a low height. And the truth being that the bombs were not very heavy bombs, and they couldn't have done armoured ships much harm. But the crew, both of the Goeben and Breslau, definitely lost their nerve, and instead of proceeding in a straight line, absolutely hell-bent for election for the mouth of the Dardanelles, started to zigzag. And in a minefield, that's fatal. So By this time, we were pelting everything we could at them, with machine guns and everything. It was really quite funny to see machine gun bullets bouncing off conning tower. It couldn't do them much harm unless you could shoot somebody through the slit in the conning tower. And the Breslau hit several mines and began to sink most convincingly. So we concentrated on the Goeben, and she hit at least two, but being a heavier armoured ship than the Breslau, which was a light cruiser. But she didn't show the same signs of distress, but she slowed down and also began to settle a bit lower in the water, so we thought we'd got them both. By the time we reached the mouth of the Dardanelles, the Goeben was going slowly, the Breslau had sunk. It wasn't the bombs that sunk her, but we'd bombed her onto the minefield and the mine sunk her, so we claimed that the Breslau was an RNAS victory. Then we followed the Goeben up the straits. Meantime, machines were going back and forwards from Mudros and Imbros, loading up with every bomb they could get, and coming over and pelting away. And the Goeben was going slower and slower. By the time she was halfway up from Cape Helles to Chenac, that's the narrows of the Hellespont itself, we thought she was just on the verge of sinking, and they carried the only thing they could do, but they did it very brilliantly. They beached her as fast as they could move at Nagara Point, which is just at the Hellespont, on a very suitable sloping beach, which just allowed her to sit there without sinking, absolutely stuck solid. But she was sitting there, she couldn't sink any further, and there she sat. We thought she was at least immobilized, and for this time we were getting aircraft coming support, even from the army in Palestine were sending us some supporting RFC chaps were coming up to support us. We had every available thing we could get hold of to keep bombing her. The bombs weren't terrifically heavy, but we weren't doing her any good, and we were also preventing repairs as far as we possibly could. The Royal Navy sent a submarine up, a very gallant effort, but unfortunately she got caught by the German minefields in the Straits, and she was sunk. Couldn't reach her. And one of our torpedo-carrying short seaplanes went in. It was a hopeless job to do it in daylight. You couldn't have got close under the concentration of fire. But in the early hours of the morning, and lobbed a torpedo at her and claimed a hit. But whether it was true or not, we don't know. But the fact remains, I went over with the commander of the Greek Naval Air Service, with whom I did a good deal of joint flying, to have a private, well, not private, but a sort of individual inspection of close to, in daylight, at a pretty low height. And we had a good inspection of Nagara Point, and we had an awful lot of nasty, very nasty anti-aircraft stuff thrown at us. And unfortunately, Nagara Point was empty, vacant. The Goeben had managed to slip off and make her way in the remaining hours of darkness up the Sea of Marmara. So she got away, a very good effort, because she was badly damaged, but they got her up to Constantinople and laid her alongside, got her through the I forget the name of that strait of Constantinople. What's the name of the
Dardanelles?
No, the Dardanelles down below where we had her. Up at Constantinople was a famous bit of water there where they used to throw the harem beauties.
One thing which surprises me about this episode is that after Goeben had run aground, where she was stuck for about 7 days, I think, on the face of it one would have thought she was an absolute sitting duck, yet it appears that RNAS aircraft weren't able to make much impression on her if she was able to just sail away.
You've got to remember that she was a very heavily armoured battle cruiser with armoured decks, and the bombs of these days were not the bombs of today. They were mostly 112-pounders, and we did do her quite a bit of damage, and we did slow the repairs down. But actually, physically, seriously to damage a battle cruiser by means of aircraft bombs at that time, even if you'd come down and placed it personally on the deck by hand, was not feasible. It was just not on. The bombs were not powerful enough, because you didn't have armor-piercing bombs. We did, somebody brought along a few special 250-pounders, but I forget what the result of them was. We weren't bombing with camels, we were purely keeping away the German fighters. And the other thing, of course, you've got to remember, that they picked a very good place to beach her. It was that corner at the Hellespont, at Nagara Point. It was a German seaplane station, and it had the finest battery of anti-aircraft guns in the Middle East. The very heavy, high-explosive stuff, always, because it was a key place, the Narrows of the Dardanelles, and it was just about the most gosh-awful place to fly through in normal times, let alone with the Goeben sitting in the middle of it. She sat right down, surrounded by a circle of the most powerful anti-aircraft guns in that area, and believe me, the sky was full of the stuff, so that she was well defended, and we were bombing her from all heights, low heights, high heights, all over the place, and getting quite a lot of hits. But I don't think anybody was kidding himself. We knew we were only making it awkward for the people that were trying to repair her. We were hoping we could delay the repair long enough till she got so stuck in the mud she couldn't get off. But it just so happened they did by going full speed astern when they'd got her patched. They got going full speed astern, the luck was in, they slid off, and she got up.
Can I ask you how you could account for the fact that with so much British aircraft around at this time, and with so much concentration on trying to get the Goeben, that she did in fact still manage to slip away?
Well, how else are you going to stop her? Aircraft couldn't sink her.
Ah, but she got away without her withdrawal being even noticed.
Oh, she got away in the dark. We were attacking her in the dark. But when you were bombing her at that time in the pitch dark, all you were bombing in the dark was Nagara Point. You couldn't see the Goeben in the dark. They weren't obliging enough to shine a searchlight on her. And probably for the last... That torpedo was dropped somewhere in the middle of the night. She may have been there, she may not. The torpedo exploded, but it might quite easily have exploded on the beach for all we knew. We were gaily dropping bombs on a vacant spot, because it wasn't until daylight came, and that was when Mauritius and I went over and were the first to find that the spot was vacant, the bird had flown.
The official history, I think, comments on this rather obscurely, that due to adverse weather conditions which were unsuitable for flying, the Goeben took advantage of them to slip away.
Not at all. She slipped away in the sensible time, in the hours of darkness, and she did it very well. They've got some... I think when she went zigzagging through the minefield, I think that the mistake of... See, she had been handed over to Turkey, and I think she'd a largely Turkish crew, and I think that's why... I think they lost the nerve a bit. When she was at Nagara Point, they sent out highly efficient German crews who did their job exceedingly well. They picked the hours of darkness, and there was no question of weather holding us up. At that time, we were so... Instructions were to get the Goeben at all costs, and we weren't letting weather stop us. And as we were bombing her a matter of several times every hour, by day and by night, for seven solid days.
Can I take you back a bit to the beginning of this, to earlier on in this episode, when the chase was on, before Goeben had beached, and before Breslau had sunk. Could you describe for me the actual role that you, with your Sopwith Camels, carried out? How did you work with the bomber aircraft? Could you give me that in a bit more detail?
Just during the chase?
Yeah.
Oh, well, to begin with, your main job was to just fly a little bit higher, keep an eye on the bombers to make sure the German fighters didn't chip in. And when the bombers went down low and there were no German fighters temporarily appearing, then just for the hell of it, we attacked the battlecruisers too with machine guns, which was just merely a gesture. We might have got a bullet through Conningtower or done something like that, especially when they began to zigzag. Anything you could do to rattle them. We certainly were raking their decks with tracers and all kinds of things. But then it was a very different matter when they... through sitting on the point, because they brought up fighter squadrons, and the air was stiff with German fighters who were attacking our bombers. We cut several shot down, and the Camel's job was to hang around above the bombers and keep the fighters off, and I think we got quite a number of them down.
Can you remember any particular highlights of the actual air battles with the German air service?
I'll tell you honestly, it was one long, confused Millie dogfight above the Dardanelles, so there's no use trying to say, can I remember any highlights? It was like a description given by a Gardaí officer of Dunkirk during the Second War, when he said, the noise and the people. That's all you could say. It was just one hell of a crowd of aircraft and aircraft shells, and the one thing that mattered was the Goeben, and we didn't just get her.
How would you quantify the extent of British aircraft in the course of this action? How big was it?
Well, it was all we could mount. All the RNS planes in the Aegean were attacking. Quite a lot of RAC planes from Palestine. For heaven's sake, don't ask me to count them, but it was really quite a big air operation. And as regards, it was the only actual hostile action that has been taken against the Goeben was by aircraft. And don't forget that we already got the Breslau, which was at least 50% of the enemy's force.